The primary election is almost here. Vote centers will be open May 7th from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. Make your vote count. Visit vote.indy.gov for more information. This message was paid for by the Marion County Election Board.
So the House does what Speaker Mike Johnson said he would do. Separate bills providing aid for Ukraine, Israel, Taiwan, and on the border. But yet the border legislation isn't there. That's not passing. Some Democrats were cheering that. Haha, MAGA, you lose. What a weird thing to say. It's America that loses. The children of liberals lose along the side the children of conservatives. Weird, weird people who see victory in a very different way than you and I. Tony Katz, 93 WIBC. Good morning. Find everything at TonyKatz.com. The phone number, 317-239-9393. But aid for Ukraine? Which will actually mean bullets for Ukraine that are made here in the U.S. It is what it means. But I'm with you. Before the border, we have to be a country that could do multiple things at the same time. But we're not doing that. That's the whole point. Don't tell me that we could do multiple things at the same time and then not do the multiple things. We're only doing one thing. Why is it that I have members of Congress saying, you know, what is it, Slava Ukraine or something like that? I'm Ukrainian, go Ukraine. But they're not feeling that way about their own country. It is the weirdest, grossest thing around. And I'm a guy who supports aid for Ukraine. We've had this disagreement for months now. It's beyond understanding. Aid for Israel? Of course I support aid for Israel. Not before the border. But there it is. There it is, as clear as day. Now, as Politico was reporting, we're going to start sending advisors to Ukraine. We're going to tell me about these advisors. We're going to teach the Ukrainians how to fight. We're going to teach them how to use weaponry. And how many advisors? Are these advisors armed? What do these advisors do? I have many, many questions. But that's not the only story out there. Of course, you saw this this maddening, ugly story of someone setting themselves on fire outside the Trump trial on Friday. And it's, you watch the video at your own peril. Really do. It's horrifying. It is horrifying. I am not so desensitized by imagery to not stare at that and say, my God, that's actually happening to a human being. This person is a conspiracy theorist, was known as to have mental issues to the family. The family did not know that this guy left Florida, thought that Trump and Biden were working together to bring about a fascist coup, and decided that this was a moment of protest and set himself on fire. He died from his injuries, which, how could he have not died from his injuries, I think is the question. Just horrific stuff. And of course, if you follow me on X, you'll find people who are telling me, Viva Palestina! Which I'm pretty sure is cultural appropriation. But they are these Hamas supporters, terrorist supporters, who not only believe in the end of Israel and the end of Jews, but in the end of you. So if you're not Israeli and if you're not Jewish, don't worry, you're not being left out. They're proud. Look at all the violence on the campus of Columbia. You can't show any violence. Here's a video. Nope, that's not enough. Here's a video. Nope, that's not enough. Here's a photo. Nope, that's not enough. Okay. Okay, sure. It's nutty. And it has to be responded to. These people are indecent. We are decent. Let's go prove it. It's us or them. That's the world we're in. That's what they have said do. Let's go do. They support terrorists. They cheer Hamas. They cheer the destruction of other countries. If you don't push back, they keep thinking that they could do things. Of course they should be arrested on these campuses. I'd bring in bulldozers. But, you know, I'm a throwback. Tony Katz, that is me, by the way. What's up, everybody? Good to be with you. 93 WIBC, good morning.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
Finding the right healthcare partner for your business isn't easy, but Hancock Well-Being at Work can help. We're a different kind of program that combines employer clinics with a wellness strategy. And in a lot of cases, we can deliver greater health benefits at a lower cost. See why well-being for your employees is well-being for your business at HancockWellBeingAtWork.org.
Unemployment stays flat in the state of Indiana. I don't know if that's a good thing or not. Unemployment at 3.5%. But the labor force participation rate down 0.2%. But still above the national rate. Tony Katz. Good to be with you. Gary Dick joins us inside IndianaBusiness.com on the X there at IIB. Personally, at Gary Dick, G-E-R-R-Y, at Gary Dick, on X. Let's get into a little bit of this, unemployment rate in the state of Indiana. You've got the Indiana Department of Workforce Development saying 3,300 private sector jobs added in the month of February. This is the latest that you've got there. Indiana feeling good about this number holding steady at 3.5?
I think so. But at the same time, and I think this is kind of getting to your point, filling jobs continues to be a big issue. In that report you referenced, Tony, the DWD says that the state had over nearly 106,000 open job postings. As of mid-month, 106,000 job openings. So there are lots of jobs out there, and companies continue to be challenged with trying to match their openings with available talent. And in some cases, it's a very challenging thing for them to do.
Well, challenging it might be, but one has to overcome challenges. Where is the feel that is coming? Is this something that's about Indiana specific, or is this about the nationwide marketplace that right now this is just the way it is? There are still openings, there's still opportunities. No, you don't have people engaging in the quitting and the moving around as they used to, and you have some people, and some especially in the world of tech, that have downsized. So just expect this to be the way it is for a while.
Perhaps, but I think the other piece, as you mentioned, is Indiana's not alone. Virtually every state in the country is facing similar conditions when it comes to workforce and workforce development and getting the jobs filled that are indeed open. You know, you've got a number of initiatives going on at the state level in terms of career pathways and a number of things that are going to take time to play out. I'm not going to solve the problem overnight. The retraining of workers here in Indiana is a big piece of that. As you look at the big announcement, SK Hynix, the big Korean company, microelectronics company, that recently announced a massive investment, $4 billion, 1,000 jobs in Lafayette and West Lafayette, Purdue University. How are you going to fill those jobs? Where are they going to come from? And a lot of those jobs, I think this is the piece kind of, not to get sidetracked here, Tony, but you know, a lot of these jobs we're talking about don't necessarily require a four-year degree in this microelectronics and semiconductor areas. In some cases, some of these plants, depending on the type of plant it is, maybe two-thirds of the jobs don't require a four-year degree. They do require credentialing and certifications and education beyond high school, to be sure, but not four-year degrees. So those are the kinds of jobs that Indiana is really trying to fill.
Talking to Gary Dick from InsideIndianaBusiness.com on X at IIB. You are calling it over there at InsideIndianaBusiness.com. You're calling it the Caitlin Clark effect. Of course, the number one pick in the WNBA draft, the college phenom from the University of Iowa. The ratings have followed her everywhere she has gone. She's here in Indianapolis. What is this effect economically, and is there a belief that it can last?
Great questions, and a lot of guessing going on right now in terms of the effect and the impact, and a lot of people lining up and trying to leverage what is expected to be big impact from Caitlin Clark coming. Look at Visit Indy, the visitors organization here in Indianapolis. They're already running ads in Des Moines, Iowa, her former hotbed, if you will, in the state of Iowa. Not a long drive. They're marketing Indianapolis as a place to come watch her play. You look at what is happening in arenas around the WNBA. A number of teams are switching arenas in advance of playing the Fever. I think the Las Vegas Aces, the latest team, they play typically, I think, in an arena that seats maybe 4,200 fans. They're going to an arena that seats 20,000. Actually, that's the Washington franchise for that one. So lots of impact. And again, Tony, the visibility, the impact that she's going to get. The Fever had one nationally televised game last year. This year, 36 of 40 games will be on national television or a national platform in the upcoming season. And that's all visibility for Indianapolis and Indiana as well.
The 36 out of the 40 games is something we've talked about and reported on. There's a conversation that has to come with this about how one manages the expectations. There's the expectation of the fan. Yep. There's the expectation of the team. There's the expectation of the city. What are you hearing about is the moment? If X, then Y. So let me give it to you two ways. If they lose the first 10 games, expect a drastic fall off and you won't be selling out games. You'll have real issues with people buying in to the WNBA. But if they win the first 10 games or they have a winning record 2 weeks, 3 weeks in to the season, expect the prices to go up, expect the opportunities to grow up, and expect them to start building on it for next year. Is there, as you have talked to people, a moment of here's the threshold in either direction, and if they cross the threshold in either direction, man, that's good things or terrible things.
Yeah, and I don't know that there are any metrics being established at this point, but your point is a good one, and managing expectations. Because the expectations now, based on the media coverage and what we're seeing and what we're hearing in terms of jersey sales and ticket prices, all those things, it's all off the charts. It's all huge. And there's going to be, let's face it, there'll be a lot of pressure on Caitlin Clark to perform and to live up. And as soon as she has a bad game or a bad, couple of games, whatever the case might be for a rookie coming into a professional league, the doubters and the haters and all those who are already out and have been will really come out. So how is that handled? We'll see. And I think the other piece of it for the Indiana Fever, which I think is a positive or bodes well, is you've got a dynamic player like Aaliyah Boston who's on the team as well. So you've got some pieces on the team that would seem to indicate this is going to be an exciting Indiana Fever team that they put on the floor. And we'll see how it plays out. But in this, especially in this social media age where expectations, you know, if you don't meet expectations, boy, you're attacked, and it's a very negative situation. So managing those expectations, you're right, I think will be an important thing going forward.
Gary Dick, InsideIndianaBusiness.com, on X at IIB. Follow them.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
Finding the right healthcare partner for your business isn't easy, but Hancock Wellbeing at Work can help. We're a different kind of program that combines employer clinics with a wellness strategy. And in a lot of cases, we can deliver greater health benefits at a lower cost. See why well-being for your employees is well-being for your business at HancockWellbeingAtWork.org.
How bad is it?
Don't sugarcoat it. Give it to me straight.
Want coffee?
I think I need some coffee.
Time to fill up on the news. Tony Katz, that's me, by the way. What's going on, everybody? 93 WIBC, good morning. Dow futures up 190, NASDAQ futures up 74. I think you've got some announcements this week in the tech world. Tesla is down because electric vehicle makers are slashing prices. Lots of competition, not as many buyers. Here we are. Nobody shocked. Nobody shocked by this. U.S. crude, whether it be the Brent or the West Texas Intermediate, is about $80+ a barrel, about 83, and not going up because Iran has said, yeah, Israel sent some rockets this way. We're not going to do anything about it because they can't. But it certainly is settling the oil markets. 83, by the way, way higher than the 70s that it was at. And if you are buying a gallon of gas in Indiana, you're paying $3.67. That's what I did yesterday. It's cheaper in other places because our gas taxes are just, well, ridiculous. Something we've known for a good long while. And then you have the Trump trial set for opening statements today. You also have at the Supreme Court where they're going to discuss the idea of immunity. President Trump saying, you can't bring charges against me for things done as president. I have presidential immunity. It's a very interesting conversation. Understand we are talking about two different things here. We are not discussing whether or not the cases brought against Trump are legit. We're not discussing whether the cases brought against Trump or have been brought at a certain time to influence an election. I think there's a lot about these cases that is illegitimate, and I think every single one of them was brought to influence an election. That's why I don't allow these people to lecture to us when they talk about decency and the rule of law. They don't give a good holy damn about the rule of law. They don't, for the record. But the idea of whether or not charges could be brought against the former president, well, that's in and of itself an interesting idea. When you're president, you may do, like, for example, if you're president and you are to respond to an act of aggression, can somebody charge you with a war crime? I'm creating just a grandest of examples. It could be 100 reasons why that is not the case. But what is it that a president can be charged with? I would think it odd that somehow a former president is immune from prosecution. But this isn't a conversation about the president doing something ipso facto. For example, this case regarding hush money and Stormy Daniels. This is going forward because this happened before he was president. Nothing about him being in the presidency would change that. Is this an argument that if he was president, anything he did after the presidency would somehow be off limits too? I think it's a question of how things are decided and then how things, you know, how someone could play it out. I just cannot imagine the situation by which everything a president does cannot be charged. we're going to hear some arguments today about this. And none of it changes the fact that what he has been charged with, the nonsense going on in New York, and it is total nonsense that this is all political. You want even more nonsense? The people over there at MSNBC decided to have Al Sharpton, the original Jew hater, interviewing Stacey Abrams, the original election denier, and said, hey, this is really important news.
We have to remember that every victory, built into every victory, are the seeds of defeat. But also built into every defeat are the seeds of victory. We have seen victory, but we cannot rest on that victory and think that it is impermeable and impervious to harm. What we know is that the attack on diversity, equity, and inclusion, DEI, is an attack on democracy, it's an attack on education, it's an attack on how our economy works.
No, it's not. This is a ridiculous conversation that MSNBC puts out there as if somehow it matters. Doesn't matter what Stacey Abrams says. She has no impact on elections. This is now extremely obvious, although she did a lot of effort in trying to register people to vote, make sure that the Republican Party is trying to register everybody they can. And talking to Al Sharpton, who offers nothing, zero, in terms of intellectual heft. This is about resurrecting once again a career, pretending that Stacey Abrams is important. It's why they put her on Star Trek as like the president of the universe. I don't know if you remember that. Like that was the character she played. Oh, adorbs. DEI is bigotry. DEI is hate. And I'm so glad to see more and more places doing away with the nonsense. This is the Wall Street Journal. Diversity goals are disappearing from companies' annual reports. Good, because it's all nonsense. Hire good people. Hire people based on quotas? Disgusting. See the difference? Glad we did. Hire good people. Hire smart people. Hire people who bring perspective. Hire people who help build the business. Hire people you like. DEI is good. DEI is bigotry. And Stacey Abrams and Al Sharpton love bigotry. That's the purpose of the interview. Tony Katz, 93 WIBC. Good morning.
Tonight you're mine completely.
Oh, I like the old school. Tony Katz, 93 WIBC. Good morning. The stories are regarding Columbia University and the bigotry, again, that's going to continue. Those stories are not going away. And I'd be certainly a fool if I didn't cover them, but I'd also equally be a terrible host if I wasn't talking about the other things that are going on. Like, for example, the FBI warning that Chinese hackers are preparing to physically wreak havoc on U.S. critical infrastructure. The hackers want to induce panic, waiting for just the right moment to deal a devastating blow. According to the reporting, this hacking campaign is known as Vault Typhoon. It's embedded itself in several American critical infrastructure companies that include telecommunications, energy and water, and others. Chinese Ministry of Foreign Affairs says Vault Typhoon is a criminal ransomware group not related to the government. Huh. If I may, how these stories relate, the story about these hackers and the stories about college campuses. Just like Chinese nationals and us putting an end to student visas,
I don't care if they pay full freight. I don't care if the college doesn't get their money. Don't care. And I say that to every university in the state of Indiana. I don't care if you get Chinese national money or not. We should put an end to almost all, if not all, foreign student visas. None. Where do you, we have a radicalness issue in the country that needs to be resolved. That problem becomes exacerbated when you allow people from other nations that don't hold American values at all and let them be part of this campus world. What does it matter to me if the professors are happy or the administrators or these radicalized students? You simply can't run a country like this. We shared the numbers last week that Brett Baer put out and Bill Melugin and Griff Jenkins confirmed. 24,000 Chinese nationals coming illegally across the border. That doesn't include those coming through lawful points of entry. And the vast majority of them are single men. And we're letting them into the country. That's insane. That is dangerous. That's crazy and destructive for a nation. How many Americans could just enter China illegally? The answer is zero. Thank you, Cleveland. Good night. Say no. Turn them back. Who cares if they're happy? What is China going to say? You can't fly them back here? Sure we can. We have airplanes and parachutes. You figure it out. Tell Xi Jinping not to get tough. We think you're a paper tiger punk, and we're willing to prove it. Except we have an administration that won't prove it, will they? Elections matter. And it needs to be stated that while there are times that we can agree on the political right, that the Republican Party does not do it right, this idea that both parties are exactly the same is untrue. Untrue. You cannot be happy. You can be bothered. You should voice it. You should apply pressure where you think it needs to. But you can't make this claim. You just sound silly. There is a difference. And the difference is great. And our job is to make sure that the difference gets clearly enunciated so people know that there are choices. Our lack of leadership, our lack of willingness creates the issue at the border, creates the issue on the campuses. I've got Kathy Hochul, the governor of New York, saying what's happening in Columbia is unacceptable. You mean where they stop Jews from walking? Where they scream that Hamas is great and chant for Hamas? Unacceptable. Send in 17 bulldozers and put an end to the madness. They go virtual classes today at Columbia University because it's too dangerous for Jewish students. And the chief rabbi at the school says, don't come back. It's too dangerous. Don't come back. Well, one of two things has to happen at that moment. Either no Jewish student goes back to Columbia ever. Go to yeshiva. This has been an argument of friends of mine who went to yeshiva. As a matter of fact, Yeshiva University should be offering up scholarships. Go there. But don't go back. If it's too dangerous, don't go back. Break the university in half. Or how about you gather 5,000 people and you just walk through their blockades? This is the conversation that is necessary about something called force. I will dig into it on Tony Katz today at noon. I will catch you then. Happy Passover, my people.